A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Tom Hopkinson of the Sunday Mirror. So, what makes a £200 million footballer? Skill, style, sustained brilliance, the sort of stardust that sells shirts from Paris to Phoenix, Arizona, via Bangkok and Bulawayo. His future's still up in the air, but daft as it sounds, Neymar would be a bargain. Wouldn't he, Tony?
£200 million bargain? Well, I tell you what, inflation's gone wild. I think he'd be a bargain for Paris Saint-Germain in the sense that he'd give them even more credibility than they've got now. They are desperate to win a Champions League, which Ibrahimovic couldn't lead them to. I wonder whether centering the team around one superstar actually will work doing that eventually. Maybe it'd be better to get more balance. But you can see the logic in it in cold hard business terms. I personally am not sure Neymar's quite as dominant. We'll get to see if he does move. Quite as dominant outside the Barcelona team. I mean, he's almost third fiddle to Messi and Suarez. So it seems an awful lot of money to me. But given the amount of money that's sloshing around in the game, we're going to see this sort of thing with regularity before long.
Yeah, where are we going with this, Tom? You know, we are talking, even in this deal, if it goes through. Now, I know Gerard Piqué's been tweeting he stays, so that's the PR from their side. You're talking about a yearly salary of around about £35 million if it goes through. Where are we going with this?
It's difficult to say, Mike, because I don't think there is an end with it. I mean, listening to Richard Scudamore's comments out in Asia, he's out at the Barclays Asia Trophy the last few days, talking about this exact matter, and he's saying that, you know, while ever this money is coming into the game, it's only going to keep exploding, and the wage levels and the transfer fees are going to keep on rising. Now, the traditional broadcasters may struggle to keep up with that money, but we've got all this other influx of cash just waiting to come into the game when with digital media now looking to get involved as well. So while ever they're outbidding the traditional broadcasters, who themselves have you know, moved the game along so much and invested so heavily in it, I just do not see where it ends.
Are we close to £1 million a week footballer?
I think that'll be after the next television deal. So I think it'll be in 2020, 2021. But, you know, there's talk of Google, Netflix, Amazon, all circling the game. The bubble's not going to burst. No. In fact, it's only going to get bigger.
You only have to see in the States with the NFL, Twitter showed, I think it was 10 games at around $1 million each per game last year. Now, Twitter, compared to Facebook, I wouldn't use the word small fry, but there's a huge difference in Facebook. So if Facebook come in and start spending big money on it, you know, it just takes it to a whole different level. I think the one thing I just want to pick up on, Tony used the word logic in the Neymar deal. I'd see the logic from PSG. I just don't see the logic from the players' point of view. You know, why go to Paris when you're playing for Barcelona, you're playing for arguably the biggest and best football club on the planet in packed stadiums against great sides? You go to Paris and it's just a cakewalk week after week.
But you've got a big Brazilian contingent there, haven't you, in terms of the players? And maybe he just wants an easy life.
Well, and potloads of money. But, you know, and he's young enough to be the heir apparent to Messi. You know, Messi can't go on forever, and, you know, they could build that team around him. It does seem a strange sort of move to me from his point of view. Perhaps he thinks PSG are going to be one of the teams of the next decade. I can't see that myself.
They're a lovely, every time I've seen PSG in recent years, they're a lovely team to watch. I mean, you know, they've been superb when we've seen them over here in Champions League games. So from that perspective, you know, yes, on the European scale, they will be one of the dominant forces. But week after week, you know, you can't just get excited for those, you know, that odd game in the Champions League when week after week you're playing against teams that just aren't going to challenge you in any way.
Here's the irony. PSG have got what the Big Six wants, an easy ride in their own division so they can excel in Europe and the Champions League, which they're not doing. I think if I was one of the owners or chairman of the top six English clubs, I'd look at PSG and think, maybe competition in my own division's better.
Yeah, but if you look at the top six, they're all in Europe this season, so they've all got a lot of demands on their plate. Just want to dwell on, you know, we are in the realms of if, but, maybe on the Neymar deal, but a transfer like that, a mega transfer like that, will have a ripple effect, a domino effect. Let's just say that Neymar deal goes through. Liverpool will come under immediate pressure to sell Philip Coutinho. You know, there's already talk of another bid of 80 million from Barcelona. There will come a point where they're going to have to sell.
Well, yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's all right bullying Southampton and trying to bully Leipzig, but, you know, all of a sudden, like, the big kid in the playground comes along and pushes you around. And I think it'll be a sobering, if it does happen, it'll be a sobering situation for Liverpool and Liverpool fans to realise where they are in the pecking order. You know, when Barcelona come calling, it's very hard to say no, especially with the amount of money they offer and what they offer the player. I think it's more a sign of the inflation with Coutinho, if they do come in for that, than actually Neymar. Neymar's at least won trophies and proved it. Coutinho still isn't the finished product. Mm. And he could probably do with another year or two in the Premier League to develop. I mean, he hasn't dominated games. It's not like Suarez. Suarez had that season where, you know, everyone just looked at him and went, well, you know, this is clearly a world-class player. Mm. I think Coutinho's not quite as near to that yet. But, as you say, he'll just be another domino in this.
And we're quite focused and centric on Britain and the Premier League, aren't we, as well? And, you know, this is a player from Latin America. Now, growing up in Latin America, what's going to be the biggest draw for you? You know, going to play for Barcelona or playing for Liverpool? Now, he's played for Liverpool. He's played very, very well for Liverpool as well. But it's that next step. And I just wonder, you know, Tony and you, Mike, you know, we all speak to people in and around Liverpool, in and around all the clubs and in and around the players as well, more importantly. And I just wonder, from what I'm being told, whether Coutinho's quite as happy to stay at Liverpool if Barcelona do come knocking as Liverpool.
Are we going to have another Suarez situation?
Well, it's different, isn't it? Because there is no buyout clause in there. It is possible. I mean, I think if it does happen, Liverpool will try and dig their heels in. I mean, John Emery, the owner over Suarez, essentially said to Pep Guardiola, his agent, you go and get your lawyers, I'll get mine. And and manage to bluff it out. I think they'll make another attempt. I think it'll be more difficult this time. And although I don't think Coutinho's the type of player with down tools.
Mm. Mm. Is he being played in the right position?
Well, I kind of think he should be more central, personally. Of course, I don't pick the team. But I think he'd be much more effective when he can go both ways. When they've played him towards the left, you know, he's cutting inside all the time, which makes it easier to play. I think playing in La Liga would be different for him as well. I mean, he's quite good in the hurly-burly madness of the Premier League, in that when people fling themselves at him, that's when he does them. He goes, he's quick, he's off. I think in Spain, they wouldn't fly at him so much. They'd probably just try and block him off, get closer to him, stand on his foot. And he has been a little bit injury prone.
Mm. And Liverpool are treading very carefully now about that Van Dijk. Yeah, basically saying, we won't make any move until we know he's for sale.
Yeah.
Southampton have left for their week-long training camp in France today. Van Dijk's not going with them, surprise, surprise. Do you expect that deal to go through, Tom?
I do, yeah. I mean, look, from a journalistic perspective, it was great for us when clearly the boys were being briefed a few weeks ago that the Van Dijk deal was done. And then, you know, we like the transparency from clubs. So
Someone should have briefed Southampton.
Someone should have told us that. Yeah, it was if Southampton didn't know. I mean, Southampton have played it very cleverly. They've come out very publicly. Oh, we're so hurt. I mean, I think the three of us, the last time we were all together on this sofa, discussed the tapping up situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're just playing a game.
Wenger's been speaking about it over the weekend,
and he just said, you know, saying the same thing that we said. But Southampton are playing this absolutely perfectly. Mm. The player is probably playing it perfectly as well with this whole, oh, my head's not in the right space to go and kick a football around or run around for on a training ground for a few days somewhere abroad. But Liverpool now are playing it quite cute as well. It will get resolved. He will be a Liverpool player. I'll be absolutely shocked if he's not a Liverpool player by the time the transfer window closes. But this is just Liverpool trying not to get the price driven up even more, but Southampton trying to drive it up.
It's going
to
be driven up.
And especially while other transfers are going on, like the Walker situation. Mm-hmm. If I was Southampton and you've just seen a right back for 55 million, then I'd be thinking, well, actually, that 50 million that we were talking about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that's just adding another 10 million
to
that.
Well, 50 million this week was 40 million 3 weeks beforehand, wasn't it? The inflation is just ridiculous.
It's astronomical. Mm.
Talking of Wenger, you know, he's talking a good game about keeping Alexis Sanchez. Do you actually believe all that?
Do you know, Wenger is one of the most... And he believes it. You can tell he believes it. It's conviction. But the delusion there, haven't we been here before? Fabregas, Nasri. I mean, Fabregas was heading out to the airport, wasn't he, to go to Barcelona? And Wenger was at a press conference going, no, he's staying. And, I mean, obviously, Van Persie. And what happens is they put up a fight, and then midway through August, there's a bit of panic and say, OK, yeah, we better let him go. Mm. Arsenal can't afford to take a 60 million-ish hit on Sanchez. You know, letting them go next year for nothing is mad. Mm. And all this talk is, if Arsenal do well, then maybe he'll stay. Well, he's free to negotiate his own deal, isn't he, after the 1st of January with foreign clubs. And, you know, you convert what would be the transfer fee into wages. Arsenal are never going to match that. It doesn't make any sense at all to keep him. And also, his body language last year was so awful. Mm. And he's part of Arsenal's problems. You know, everyone looks, oh, yeah, he's busy. You know, he gets on the ball, he makes things happen. He shoots from ridiculous positions. He doesn't pass the ball when he should. And when his teammates do something bad, he's like, there's no leadership about him.
I can't stand that. And if I was Wenger, I'd be doing my utmost to get Lamar in and get the best money for Sanchez, but get him out and freshen things up there.
And if he does go to PSG, it works because you're not selling to a direct rival.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Bayern Munich with a club that we were told were interested in him to begin with, but they soon balked at £400,000 a week, didn't they? Mm. I completely agree with Tony on this. You know, the body language last year, and then for him to complain and say, you know, I want to play for a club who's in the Champions League. Well, you should have done more to get your club in the Champions League than Mill, mate.
A team with Sanchez and Özil in doesn't make the top four. That's a scandal. Mm. They should be looking in the mirror, the pair of them, saying to themselves, you know. Why didn't I do better? They should be leading teams to titles. They've got that much ability. Mm. But they've gone there.
Jose Mourinho, never short of an opinion, has basically come out and said crazy prices are being paid for average players. Do you believe that?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean,
and below average players as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem with Jose is as mad and at times dislikable as he is, he's often right, and you don't have to like it. But in this case, I would have thought that he could be one of the architects of the whole era of paying too much for average players. You know, because the clubs he's been involved with have generally thrown the money about as if they were drunken sailors. Mm.
The one that stood out for me the other week, we were down at Bournemouth to see Nathan Ake. I'm nothing against Nathan Ake as a player, very good young prospect, but he's a £5 million player for me. He's just joined Bournemouth for £20 million. Mm. Now, you know, how is Nathan Ake worth that much money?
Yeah.
But he is if it's, you know, comparative to everything else that's going on.
But you look at Real Madrid, they've sold two players who weren't in their starting 11, Danilo and Morata, for €100 million. Who's the fool in all this?
Well, it's the Real Madrid mystique. And you know what? There's certain clubs as well that if you do a deal with them, you should check your fingers after you shake hands. And Real Madrid are one of them. And it's scandalous that they've got that much money for them. It wouldn't surprise me if neither of them fulfils the sort of expectations.
I disagree with that, actually. I mean, I think Morata... I think they've got a very good player, Chelsea, in Morata, and £65 million. If we're looking at Lukaku, £75 million. Mm. Yes, Lukaku scored goals in the Premier League 3 seasons running, but Morata is a Spain international. You know, this kid can play, and it's not like he's being kept out of, you know, an average side. He's just not played regularly at Real Madrid because they've got arguably the world's best player or the second best player in the world keeping him out of
us. And to be fair, did well at Juventus as well, didn't
he? Absolutely, yeah. So I
but
think
he is their second choice. choice.
But so much more.
Let's I'd probably disagree with that as well, Mike. I think there's so much of the phony war going on. I think Chelsea were very much in for Morata right from the start. There was always a feeling that United were ahead of them in the race to begin with, because United had probably been working on the deal or pushing for him for the last year or so. Mourinho had certainly been trying to work on that for a while. But my understanding is that they were in for Lukaku and for Morata, and it was very much Roman Abramovich had agreed to sanction the money for both of them if they could get them.
I actually think Morata's movement and touch is better than Lukaku's, and in many ways he'll suit that team more.
Oh, well, I mean, crikey, getting on the end of crosses from Willian and Eden Hazard and Pedro, and with the likes of Mata working away behind him, I think it's a great signing for them.
Where do you think Chelsea are going? You know, Conte has signed an improved contract, but still only so he's still got 2 years left. That's either not the greatest tribute and testament to his work, or it's an acknowledgement that in the real world he's only going to be around for a couple of years like any modern manager.
Well, Chelsea do things differently as well, don't they? I mean, they've since Mourinho left for the first time, they've created a system where, how should we put it, the manager is perhaps not quite as important as he thinks he should be. And, you know, we've seen the turnover in managers. And I think Conte believed, certainly after the renaissance last autumn, that come January and come the summer, he'd have a bit more say in the transfer business than perhaps he's got. But, you know, it's a perennial problem at Chelsea. You know, they've got the way they work. And sometimes managers will find it frustrating. One of the interesting things about Conte is we haven't seen in the Premier League the more combustible sides of his personality. He's very combative and very, very fractious. And I think there's been various points in his Chelsea career where he's been, it'd be too far to say unhappy, but he's been a bit unsettled. And perhaps we haven't seen his anger at the full extent of it yet.
Not the extent that Costa... I mean, I love the fact that he told Costa in January. You know, when that whole story, remember when it all broke and it was sort of the water was poured on it a little bit at the time. But, you know, he's now told everyone on the pre-season tour, yeah, that was when I told him he could go. I quite like the way Chelsea have done the business with Conte, because and I like the way that he's done it with them as well, because I think, yeah, what's the point in Chelsea handing out a five-year contract to someone? When was the last time any manager lasted longer than 2 or 3 years at Chelsea? So it's pointless from all sides. It's like, look, we'll reward you for the work you did last season, so there's your pay rise. You know, we all know that within 6 months, if Chelsea are struggling or are there problems behind the scenes, then Conte will be gone anyway. So the whole rigmarole of going through and signing a new contract would have just been absolutely pointless.
But when you look at what happened to the last Chelsea manager who won the title, you know, before the end of the next season, he was gone.
What about, you know, there's a lot of stories around back end of last week, Matic going to Manchester United as a sort of £50 million favour. Football's an ego-driven business, isn't it? Are Chelsea really going to do that if they are perceived to have been the losers in the Lukaku deal?
I can't see it being that, you know, a favour. I think the only reason they'd sell is if they think that, one, they don't need him, and two, he's not of the highest class to worry them too much when they play them. I mean, Matic is a little bit one-dimensional, you know, that's been recognised. I mean, after his first half season where he was superb, he got found out a little bit. He was good last year, but within a very, very rigid system. And Conte probably wants someone with a little bit more flexibility than him. So if that deal gets done, I think for all the talk of favours, there'll be smoke and mirrors there.
Yeah, I think they've proved before when Mata went to United, they're not averse to selling players. Mourinho was always very outspoken about that, wasn't he? You know, why would I stand in someone's way if it's a player that I'm happy to sell? He can go and play anywhere for me. But I think with Matic, there was always Ivanovic. We know he was always very close to Roman Abramovich, and Matic and Ivanovic are very close friends as well. So you can imagine, you know, there is a little bit of a favour and a respect. You know, you've done a good job.
There's always been a Chelsea, well, since Abramovich took over, he's always had his favourites. I mean, part of David Luiz coming back was his relationship there.
And they let Cech go to Arsenal, didn't they?
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's interesting, if you look at the way Chelsea are working, we all know about all their young players now. They are being signed up this summer on relatively long contracts for about 2020, 2021, and then pushed out on loan. Zouma's a really good case in point. Mm. He signs a new 5-year deal, I think, immediately shipped out on a season loan, to West Brom. Is that right that a Premier League club should loan their players to another Premier League club?
I don't think it is, no. I like the loan system more than a lot of people do because I think it does help young players and I think it's vital for them to go off into the lower leagues, into the Championship, League One and League Two, and get experience, be blooded in proper senior football and then come back to a team. But I do not like this idea, and I think you should be allowed to do it only to a certain age. I do not like this idea that you can loan a player to another Premier League club because it really does affect the competition. Joe Hart, man, what's Joe Hart doing going on loan at his age? You know, he should not be going on loan to West Ham and then not allowed to play against Manchester City for two games. It's important. So they're not the only... Chelsea do it a lot, but they're not the only club.
I was trying to make a general point.
Yeah, they're not the only club who do it.
I don't have a problem with it, except for the fact that they can't play against the parent club. You know, if they get rid of that, then you can see a logic to it. You know, Zouma needs playing time, you know, after his injury. He'll go there, he'll learn from Pulis, because, I mean, you know, no one defends as beautifully as West Brom. They're a joy to watch. People say they're boring. You know, when they get six men back and see the way they move, the situational pressing, oh, I love it. But, you know, it's... So he'll go and learn there, and he was a bit haphazard as a defender. But, you know what? Not being able to play twice against Chelsea, that's a scandal.
On Tony Pulis, Frank de Boer wasn't that happy about the way they were monstering Wilf Zahar at the weekend.
Let's watch off a duck's back there, isn't it? It wouldn't be the first time that Tony's come off away from a press conference or a game.
He actually sat down for a press conference. Did you see that?
Yeah. Remarkable. That is the biggest surprise of the summer. Yeah. The one thing I will, just going back to the loan thing, like a lot of people are getting on the high horse about, oh, Zouma's just signed a new five-year deal and then gone out on loan and a couple of the other... From a business perspective, you're not going to say to someone who is in, and I don't know what term of his contract Zouma was in, but particularly any other player, let's say they've only got 1 year left on the contract, you're not going to send him out on loan and let him have a year performing for somewhere and he can just walk away on a free. It's just, you know, I think clubs get a lot of stick for that, but it's just practicalities of the situation.
But there is still a lot of talent going to waste at Chelsea. You know, I looked at Andreas Christensen, who's had a couple of really good years in the Bundesliga, has come back. He hasn't got a Scooby-Doo's
job. Why is that going
job?
To waste, though, if he's done well at, in the Bundesliga? Because
he's not playing for Chelsea. That's what I'm saying. Is they're developing these players for other clubs.
Not necessarily if he comes back and he then gets his chance. I mean, I think he's going to be with the first team squad this season, isn't he? So is he going to get his chance? I mean, look, I'll agree with you in a year's time if he's been back and he's in the first team but not got a look in.
I think he's a heck of a player.
He's superb. I remember when he came to the club, Mourinho was talking to us. I don't even know whether he joined under Mourinho, thinking about it. But when he came, we were talking to Mourinho not long after, and he was saying what a great footballer he is. So there's high hopes for him. But again, I don't have too much of a problem with players going away and learning about how to play the game in different cultures, different countries as well.
And he said the time he needs to play. You know, he needs to get regular football.
Because on that broader issue, Tony, Neymar had played 200 first-team games by the time he was 20.
Yeah.
Whereas our generation, bits and bobs, you know, even today, one of the most promising new players coming up in this generation, Mason Mount, he's going to sign to do a year in Vitesse in the Eredivisie. Where are our kids going to play?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, in the immediate aftermath of Bosman, it swung the other way, where, you know, the basic logic was get the kids in the team as young as possible because they might leave as soon as they get to 21. So, you know, wring everything out of them. Now, there's so much money and you're buying ready-made players. And it's a struggle for people to come through the youth system. Chelsea, you know, after winning the FA Youth Cup almost every year, you know, it's hard to their players to see the route of the first team. So in that sense, the loan system makes you know, a great deal of sense. However, you know, you've got to start producing your own players. Manchester City, for example, the whole Etihad campus idea was set up to replicate Barcelona and bring players through. And now you see people realising that there's no direct path to the first team.
Well, that's interesting because the younger players now are becoming more restless, more militant. You know, we had the story at the end of last week about Jadon Sancho turning down £30,000 a week at 17, by the way, because he knows interest from Tottenham, from Arsenal. You know, he's potentially the player of his generation.
Yeah.
Are we going to see more of that, where the younger players are going to be basically beginning to throw their weight about, both in a commercial sense and also in a sporting sense?
Yeah, I think we'll see more players saying, look, you know, we're not going to have this. But it's the choice, isn't it? And now I've got no problem with a player signing for Chelsea or Manchester City, Manchester United at a certain age and then going off on loan to play his game. If that's his prerogative, if that's what he wants to do, that's what his family think is a good way of developing his career. But also on the flip side of that, if Jadon Sancho, I think there's interest from Borussia Dortmund as well. I think they're coming quite strong for him. And so the flip side is, if he thinks, well, actually, look, £30,000 a week, 17 years old, thank you very much, that is great money, I'll stay, no problem. But also, if he's willing to back his talent and think to himself, well, actually, you know, I've heard from Arsenal, I've heard from Tottenham, I've heard from Borussia Dortmund, I back myself to go and I can see a better pathway into the first team there than I can at Manchester City, then I'll go and do it. And I just think that's when the market forces of the Premier League are actually working at their best. And if a player has got the attitude and the mentality that he can say to a club, well, look, thanks for everything you've done for me, but realistically, am I going, look at all the players you're buying in my position, am I going to ever make a breakthrough here? I'd rather go and take my chances and you'll have to buy me back in a few years.
Because the interesting thing is, had he stayed at Watford, who sold him to Manchester City when he was 14 for £500,000, there's a really good chance he would be playing this season.
Oh, without a doubt. And however, it's probably better for your career and your CV to go to City. Learn there and then develop. But I do sense there's a growing sort of feeling amongst agents and parents of young players, a growing realisation that there comes a point where they have to play. They can't stay in the age group games. They need to get into the first teams. I think this is one of the symptoms of it, and we're going to see more and more of it going forward, because you play in the age group teams, you get blocked off from the first team, and suddenly you're 22, 23, and you're going nowhere except to the Championship, and then you can't play against men.
We talk about Neymar and the fact that he played 200 games before a certain age. You look at Wayne Rooney and the first team football he got. Now, I know they're two exceptional talents, and not many players have talents like that, but you can still go and play. You know, if you've got a degree of talent and you're an 18-year-old footballer, you can still go and play in League 2, League 1. And by the time you get to 20, 21, you should have developed. If you're going to develop, then you should have done regardless of where you're playing. And particularly, you know, as Tony says, when you're not just in and around a first-team academy and campus and not actually getting proper match football.
Yeah, because we do live in an age where young players are being increasingly hyped. And let's hands up. You know, we probably do our fair share of hyping, don't we? Phil Foden had one admittedly hugely impressive performance in a friendly in the Manchester Derby in the States. The next thing you know, there are YouTube compilations, 84 things you ever wanted to know about Phil Foden on one game. Isn't that a symptom, one, of an overheated industry, but two, a symbol of the dangers of pre-season matches? People read too much into it.
Without a doubt. But on the other side of it, the talk coming out of City for a long time
has been... He was the one.
Foden's ability and brilliance. And clearly, you know, he's got a great passing range. He's got his movements superb. And they're really excited about him. I mean, it's typical, you know. Whether it's Foden or a transfer target from the continent, the minute they get mentioned and linked with first team football, suddenly everyone's writing 5,000 words on them, and you know how they'll fit into the team, and there's YouTube compilations set to really bad music which only show, you know, they don't show where the ball goes afterwards.
What would your backing music be, Tony?
What would my back cycle killer and a defensive one. Yeah. But yeah, there's a little bit of overhype there. But I think he's a genuine talent. Yeah. And he is the likeliest of City's group of kids to get into the first team. And, you know, David Silva's 31 now and, you know, can't go on forever. And he's at the right age to develop.
Well, they bought Bernardo Silva in.
Well, there is that.
But what about Foden? You know, the one thing that I hear from people around City is that he's very emotionally mature. And that's exactly what you need if you're a young player. You need to have that hardness about you, but also you need to be almost like emotionally intelligent to know where you are.
Yeah, of course you do, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a great trait to have. And but, you know, I worry about these players as well, and actively worry about them, of course. But, you know, when you hear conversations like this, oh, he's going to be the next big thing, we don't know until he's actually played 38 games of a Premier League season, even 20 games of a Premier League season. We just don't know. Like, he could stand out at the academy level. He could stand out for England under-19s, England under-20s, even the 21s. But, you know, until he's been in that first-team environment, do we know if he's really going to make it?
Mm. City throwing the money around yet again. Bernard Mendy, this week's record transfer. Mm. Is that a good deal for them?
There's the usual
50 million.
There's a little bit of a sense of panic as we get near to the season and the fact that, like, they haven't really got a defence. Mm. So, you know, they're overpaying madly, and I expect to see a little bit more of us as we go into it. I mean, Mendy's quick, he gets forwards. He could probably play in the midfield, couldn't he? And so, you know, he could keep Pep's dream of having a team of midfielders and attackers going. I think they've overpaid a little bit there.
I think when you look at Walker, I mean, you know, he can do it in the Premier League. He's done it week in, week out, and has been a very, very good footballer. Really grown in the last couple of years. But with Mendy, again, you know, it comes back to this. It's different doing it in Ligue 1 than it is doing it in the Premier League.
Mm. Mm. With City, you know, Pep has already said that he would favour the transfer window closing the moment the season starts. That, to me, sounds logical.
Yeah.
Now, logic hasn't got much to do with modern football. Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I do. I think it should be closed the day before the first game, and I think it should probably close. Whereas you have to register by 12 o'clock, don't you, by noon the day before a game for it to go through. And I think the cut-off point has to be that. I mean, I don't even think there's the excitement there, is there, that there was in years gone by with deadline day either. I mean, it was a great marketing tool at the time, but I think when was the last real blockbusting move going through on deadline day that you didn't see coming?
Because it is getting a bit ho-hum, isn't it? Oh, there's another £50 million being spent. You know, well, that's probably why we began the show by talking about £200 million and Neymar, because you have to have that type of hype.
Headline number.
Yeah, you know, to get our interest. Can I just look at goalkeepers very quickly? Because they're not really been affected by this inflation spiral as much as outfield players. I know we've talked about pre-season, you shouldn't really read too much into it. But if I were Pep Guardiola, I'd be very nervous looking at Ederson in that first game against United.
Are you sure that doesn't mean they haven't been affected by the inflation? Because looking at Ederson, I thought, that's an awful lot of money they paid for him.
Yeah,
it's difficult. I mean, he's very young, and I mean, we all know that De Gea had such a... he had an adjustment period, let's say, as he got used to the Premier League, and Ederson might suffer a similar thing. You know, on the first evidence, you know, we're terrible for condemning people at the first sign. It looks another Manchester City goalkeeping catastrophe. And who of us wouldn't be amused by that?
Yeah. On the other side, Szczesny, who, you know, has been away in Italy for 2 years, had the highest number of clean sheets in Serie A with Roma last season, has just been shipped out to Juventus for loose change, £10 million. Are you surprised that Arsenal let him go so quickly?
I'm not surprised now, really, no. I thought it was a mistake when they shipped him off a couple of years ago, yeah. I mean, I think, look, he's not as good a goalkeeper as Peter Cech. Mm. I think there are better young talents out there in the Premier League now than Szczesny. You know, I'm thinking of the likes of Jack Butland, who I know Arsenal have had a look at. You know, would they be better off making a move for someone like him? And so I don't think now, but I think a few years ago, I never understood why Szczesny didn't get the chance that he got. I mean, look, we know he likes a ciggy. He can be a little bit mischievous. I mean, he's an absolutely great lad, by the way, when you interview him as well, or when you spend a little bit of time in his company. But a real character, so I think he's a sad loss to the Premier League. But I think for now, I understand why they've let him go.
There was also a sneaking suspicion that he would have been a much better goalkeeper with two solid centre-halves in front of him.
more than a sneaking suspicion.
Yeah. If you look at Ross Barkley, Tony, it's obvious that his face doesn't fit anymore at Everton.
Mm.
Has he got delusions of grandeur, asking for £100,000 a week? Should he, if Spurs are interested, it seems that there is some degree of interest.
He's got delusions asking Spurs for £100,000.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, he should walk to White Hart Lane, shouldn't he?
Well, he should.
Or Wembley.
He should do. I mean, he's not quite fulfilled his talent. He hit a ceiling, and he stayed there. you can see all the raw materials there, but I wonder whether, and I know that Koeman does, whether he's got the football intellect to actually, you know, play for a top-class team. So, yeah, if I was him, I'd take the chance and I'd go to Tottenham, given that they haven't exactly padded the squad out. He'd be more than a squad player, and he'd get a fair amount of playing time with good players alongside him.
I think that one goes through. I just think that's one of the ones that we have to wait until the third or fourth week of August for it to happen. But
In Levy time.
In Levy time, yeah. And I mean, hey, interesting that other clubs have been linked with him. I think United were linked with him this weekend, weren't they, as well? And maybe even Arsenal, which would be quite cute from representatives or from the selling club trying to hurry it along. But I think
I was going to say that those sort of links never seem to come from Old Trafford or the Emirates to the, you know, it's...
Let's look elsewhere. West Ham. Now, I think they bought well in Hernandez. I can see him getting goals for them. Mm. I'm not so sure about Arnautovic. 25 million plus another 26 million in wages. He seems to me to be a one in four type player. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues with him. He's another one whose demeanour on the pitch sometimes makes you wonder about his mentality. They've been desperate to get someone up front, you know, for a long time. And it seems an awful lot of money, but I think that's another symptom of... I mean, I'd see him as a 10 million player, another symptom of this mad inflation that we've just seen. You know, I think Hernandez has scored goals, you know, everywhere, you know, and he's just got that knack. The other parts of his game may need improving, and he has that horrible tendency to stray offside too often. But who cares when he's scoring goals?
And he can, you know, you can see why one of the primary motivations of him coming back to England are £140,000 a week. I don't know if you saw that stat that was flying around last week about West Ham 31 strikers since 2010. Tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it?
Some great names on the list that even now, even after they played for them, you had no idea who they were. Yeah, I agree with Tony, sadly. I think Arnautovic, and I think you said, Mike, one in four player. I think maybe a little bit better than that, maybe one and a half or two in four. But he could be a very good signing if they can get him firing all the way through the season. But I think Hernandez, I think at £16 million, when you see £75 million for Lukaku, you see 65 or 67 million for Morata. To get him for £16 million, Hernandez, someone who has scored goals in every country he's played football in and will continue to do it for West Ham, I think that's a great signing.
Let's look at what's going on in France. Chelsea are supposedly in for the Nice defender, Malang Sarr, who I have to admit I've never seen play, or not consciously anyway. You know, Watford had a 12 million euro offer for the Lyon striker, Cornet, rejected. Is that market ever going to be exhausted? It seems logically that it should soon.
Well, I mean, obviously there'll be players at the top end who will be worth buying. But there are no bargains there anymore, are there? You know, and it's been a long time since the bargains there. I think that there's a lot of wishful thinking. I mean, the whole Graham Kerr at Newcastle, you know, it's, oh, yeah, I found a market, an untapped market. Well, not really. I think that there's very few players there who you can get at a reasonable price who will have the ability to make the transition to the Premier League in terms of pace and physicality.
Well, the one thing you have to say about the French market is because it has been plundered over the years, they've had to keep bringing through young talent and giving chances. I mean, look at Monaco. They're going to have to bring in five new players this season,
aren't they? There is basically last person out of the stadium turn out the lights.
Switch the casino lights off and everything. But they're going to have to keep giving chances to young lads. And because these young players are getting their chances and playing regular first-team football, they are benefiting from it. And the Premier League clubs are now looking at them and saying, well, they've proved they can do it, so let's give them a go. I mean, you're absolutely right. It won't, you know, you can't keep fetching coal out of the same mine forever, can you? But it has been a very happy hunting ground. And I think we'll see for the next couple of years at least, I still think we'll see Premier League clubs going and signing some very good players from France.
When we look at Premier League clubs, we've always talked about player power. Are we at the time now where that's just beginning to change quite subtly, so that we've had, for instance, Liverpool not being able to get hold of Keita? They're probably going to have to wait to get him for 48 million this time next year, where clubs are basically have got the inclination now to put their foot down and say, you're staying here, mate.
Well, there's a small group of clubs who can't be financially bullied too far, and all the Premier League clubs should be in that. But the reality is, in the end, sort of the real politic will kick in. If a player wants to leave, and he wants to leave badly enough, it makes sense for the club to let him go and take the money. And so in that sense, player power hasn't gone away. It depends on your status as a player. I mean, obviously, you've got to be in demand, and you've got to have that ability to force a move, but that'll happen as long as the game exists. Mm.
Do you think, Tom, that players will basically begin to move much more now? There'll be a churn rate. So a bit like managers who only last 1 or 2 years at a club, do you think players will start to do that?
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think it keeps players fresh, you know, and keeps them hungry. I mean, there'll be the odd player who, you know, the odd Steven Gerrard who stays at a club his entire life, the odd John Terry. I know Terry's now moved on, but he'll forever be a Chelsea player, won't he? But I just think the business side of it is so huge, and this isn't new, this has been the case for years, but it's reaching such an unprecedented level now that it doesn't just work for the player to move on after 2 or 3 years. It works for the clubs, it works for the agent, it works for everybody involved, because, you know, a player moves from one super club to another. I mean, let's look at Paul Pogba's deal, £89 million. How quickly, let's spread that over 5 years, how quickly have Manchester United earned that money back just by the merchandising rights alone for selling shirts with Paul Pogba? So if they were to let him go in a couple of years' time to, say, a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or a PSG, then they would make their money back on him in no time. Pogba's getting paid well, the agent's getting paid well. So it's just going to work for every, you know, whatever level you're at. It's just going to work. So I think you're absolutely right. I think we'll see 2 or 3 years at a club and then move on. Mm.
Whereas Mourinho is talking with tongue in cheek, one suspects, about staying for 15 years. Who does he think he is? Alex Ferguson.
Now, that's one thing you can't see happening. You know with Jose, I'd say 70% of the time he speaks with forked tongue. You really can't see it. I mean, let's face it, last season he was on the brink. He was brought in as a quick fix, and it looked for a long time as if he wasn't going to get that fix. And as it turns out, they were the most successful team in the country. You know, 2 trophies and Champions League qualification. So you can't argue with
that. Was it Dave Kidd who made the point that 15 years is a hefty hotel bill, isn't it, if he stays up?
Yes.
But, I remember sitting at Mourinho's, one of his early press conferences in his second spell at Chelsea, and him saying, I want to be here for 10 years. I'm sure he does. You know, I'm sure as we sit here right now, and Mourinho, he's asleep in whatever time zone he's on at the moment, I'm sure he is sitting there thinking, actually, I would quite like to be at United in 10 years' time. But he knows as well as we do that it just won't happen because, as we've just said, football has changed so much.
And even that, you saw him enough last year. He didn't appear to be enjoying himself, does he? He didn't have his old bounce about him. You know, he's like, life seemed to be a struggle at those United press conferences. And you think to yourself, you know, this fella's not enjoying it. I mean, he might now that they've won 2 trophies.
He ought to be enjoying it in this season, didn't he? I mean, and we know how well Jose Mourinho does traditionally in his second season as well. Mm. So it is going to be fascinating, given the fact that he's, you know, he cannot now say that this is not his squad. You know, he's shaped it, he's moulded it, he's got some big players and a couple of players.
Has he got to win the title this season?
No, I don't think he's got to win it. I think Ed Woodward, you're not going to get to the level of business that Ed Woodward and the Glazers have got to without having some sort of, you know, yes, aim high, but there's got to be some realism that United aren't the only club spending that money. But I think anything other than top three, maybe even top two, and it will be deemed an absolute failure. And I also think it depends on the points gap. I mean, was it about 24 points between them and Chelsea? I think they've got to be within 3 or 4 points maximum of whoever wins this season.
I think they've got to put in a title challenge.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily have to win it. Yeah. On a challenge.
I just want to end with an unsung English manager, Graham Potter. Manages Östersund, who beat Galatasaray in the Europa League last week. Fantastic achievement. He studied at Leeds, got an MA in leadership and emotional intelligence. He talks about developing footballers as open-minded human beings. Is he long for this world?
Nah, it's never going to work. You know what's really sad? People like him, there's people like Paul Tisdale, who coach and manage in a different way and do treat players as human beings and have communication. And they're successful within the small terms they're in. And actually, when you look at it, the clubs they're working at, they've been really successful, doing better than they've ever done before. But because they're now a big club, we ignore them. I actually think that way of managing and coaching will, at some point in the future, become more popular, and I think it works. Mm. And
you look at the States, you know, in the NFL, NBA, you know, Greg Popovich, the great coach there, is talking about creating people.
Yeah, I mean, they're nice sound bites, aren't they? But I don't believe that someone like Mourinho can be as successful as he's been without treating people, 23 members of his squad perhaps, as adults, as human beings. And, you know, you speak to so many players and they'll say, yeah, look, he was hard on me, he worked me hard, but he was an amazing manager to work for. So, I would agree to an extent with you, but I just think...
I think the most important thing is, you know, sort of work into the psychology of a group and understanding who needs to who needs to be hauled over the coals and who needs, an arm around.
Memo to managers everywhere. When the pressure bites, try a little tenderness. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.